Good Wednesday morning, everyone. It is January 27th. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here on the old show. Today, we're going to be talking about evictions getting out of control. President Biden's executive order doesn't exactly do enough to stop it. It sounds good on paper, and this was an executive order, but they need to go further. We'll tell you why corporate landlords are walking all over poor Americans. Once again, it's like a continual narrative of marginalized lower-class Americans getting stepped on by corporate elites. So we'll tell you some of the companies that are steamrolling some of these Americans right now and being forced out of their homes. Also, we're going to talk stimulus in just a few minutes. Democrats plan to steamroll Republicans on the stimulus front, and they're not making any bones about it. But where is the $2,000 stimulus checks in these discussions? Like, what has happened? Why are Democrats now talking about $1,400? We're going to give you Joe Biden's wishy-washy answer in a press conference yesterday on that exact question. And is President Trump and the Trump family getting ready to run for political office in 2022 and 2024? Yes, I did say the Trump family. We're going to tell you why Marco Rubio is pretty nervous this morning, visibly shaken. In a television interview, we will show you this interview. I found it quite stunning. And also, billionaires getting richer as the wealth gap exploded. We'll show you the new Oxfam numbers this morning. This is ahead of the big Davos conference where all the rich people get together. So we'll tell you about those wealth gap numbers this morning. Grover is here in the house, ready to party. We've got a big show lined up for you. He's ready. David is in our control booth. He's our producer extraordinaire. Say hello to the peeps, everyone. Say hello to the peeps. Is the studio fully finished yet?
It's in a stage where I just got to clean up on this other side over here, behind this monitor. You can see there's some junk right here, lenses and stuff. I got to put that all away, and then I'm good. It's nice to come in.
Did you get a haircut too?
I did, and a real job.
See,
got all a beard trimmed,
high and tight.
Got
the high and tight.
Yep, it's called a high fade.
Demanding it. Get the high fade. Get the beard trimmed up. Wow, it's a new day around here.
It is.
It's a new day. Hey, I don't have to tell you how difficult it is right now for small businesses out there. Businesses are right now facing enormous challenges right now, trying to reach out to new customers during the pandemic, staying connected, especially if their physical store is closed. And I've seen from many of you who watch our show that say that, you know, you've had to shut down your business. You've had to reduce the amount of employees you have. It's been crushed. So I'm excited to tell you about, again, we only partner with companies here on this show that will actually help you, that I think are able to bring you real value. And that's where Podium comes into play. So listen to what these guys figured out that's absolutely brilliant. We're really in a new texting age right now. So Podium, what they do is pretty fantastic. So in the face of local businesses, all kinds of change that they're facing, local businesses are using Podium to grow stronger than ever. Podium gives your business the messaging tools to turn your website into a thriving storefront. We're talking texting with your customer leads and teammates and your customers all in one area. So it's all text messaging built into your website. And when you close a deal, Podium even makes it easy to get paid, contact-free over text message. Even you can use Apple Pay to have them close a deal. So simple to use. It's an ultimate messaging platform for local businesses. With Podium reviews, you can easily text customers to leave an online review, improving search rankings. Podium web chat lets visitors text with your team right from your homepage. Here's an example. This one company, RPM Alamo, they increased their business by 20% during the pandemic. Their owner, Tony, said, "We've generated more revenue, decreased vacancy rates, pulled in more leads than we could have in multiple years." He said that's priceless. And one more example, the bridal collection. They processed over 200,000 no-contact payments. And Lynn, the owner of the bridal collection, says, "We don't even have to take credit cards into the store. We do it all remotely. Podium has been a godsend for us in our journey." So you can find out how Podium works for you and help your business reach more customers today. You can get started for free today for your business. You can just go to podium.com/invest. That's podium.com/invest. And we thank them for their support of Morning Invest. Awesome stuff. Thanks to the Podium team and for helping businesses. I said I wanted to implement Podium for one of my companies because I think it'll be a game changer. So I'll be looking into that and be using them. So thank you so much, Podium. All right, let's talk about evictions now. And we're going to tie this all together with stimulus and this whole mess that we're facing right now. I want to talk about basically how landlords are screwing the poor through this eviction process. So President Biden the other day in his executive orders extended that existing eviction moratorium out to the end of March. Well, guess what? That order came out of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, okay? And it has its basis in public health, which is to prevent the spread of COVID-19. But as I've told you here before, it's a pretty terrible solution. Because when President Trump did it, I said, this doesn't do anything. All it does is it makes sure that certain buildings would have the opportunity to employ an eviction moratorium based on COVID-related health issues. But what if someone has lost their job? What if a whole host of other reasons have been in play? And so renters have had to attest under perjury, penalty of perjury, to their inability to pay. They've had to sign all sorts of onerous paperwork. I would love to hear from you. Let me know in the chat today, like, how many of you have had to go through this process? So while they are going through this process, they continue to accrue unpaid rent and interest. So it sounds great, like this eviction moratorium. It's like, okay, great, you're stopping evictions. Not quite. And any evictions for something other than non-payment of rent are still allowable. So loud noises, landlords are getting creative and saying, I didn't know you had a pet, when they clearly did know that you had a pet. Or they're saying, we're getting noise violations about your apartment, when it's like a little old lady who's never had a noise violation in her life. But that's what the landlord says. So it doesn't have for the fact that you haven't been paying rent, but now we're going to let you go. And it forces landlords to get really creative about dumping people on the street. It's really awful. And this is exactly what's been happening since the order went into effect back in September. Hundreds of thousands of tenants have been losing their homes because the CDC order is totally vague and limited. Here's a headline on this front from David Dayan. It kind of sums it up. The eviction moratorium should have been improved, not just extended. My point exactly. So even when the CDC order qualifies, there's no enforcement mechanism, and it has been ignored by states and housing courts. Like a lot of people said, in fact, one Right to City Alliance said, quote, Trump's federal eviction moratorium was intentionally weak, leaving millions of tenants unprotected. It's hardly a policy that inspires confidence for communities struggling under the pandemic, end quote. Now, President Biden could have removed these loopholes in his executive order, but he didn't. And instead, he just basically took President Trump's policy and just extended it slightly. And by the way, he didn't even extend it until September, when he should have, when other pieces of the rescue plan were extended. It was only extended until March, which makes no sense at all. Here's an example of some of these tenants right now. This is just heartbreaking. To listen to some of these tenants who, through no fault of their own, are just being forced out. They don't know if they're going to be able to come home after work and find their apartment is there.
I never thought that me and my family would be displaced with the uncertainty of where to go and what to do next. At this moment, I am literally waiting for the sheriffs to show up at my front door to remove me. Every night I go to sleep, I'm thinking, ugh, tomorrow's the day. And then I just go to work.
And there's the sheriff showing up. Here, you got to get your stuff out. Grab your computer, grab your printer, get out.
The COVID happened. I was working for a mom and pop flooring company that went under due to the COVID. That same week that I found out that the company was closing, I immediately got a job at Family Dollar down the street from here, causing me to take a $4.50 decrease in my pay, leaving me really short rent-wise. I really don't have any other expenses except home expenses, my utilities. I don't have a vehicle.
Chrissy is one of the thousands of tenants within Jackson County, Missouri, that has been evicted since our eviction moratorium expired. Chrissy was trying to do everything right. She moved into this house so that her kids could stay at the same school.
This room was my bedroom. It did have a king-size bed in it, my dresser, everything I own. And now it's got nothing. It had a big 55-gallon fish tank that has now been minimized to a bucket. It was probably within 45 days or so that I got my paperwork, court again, and then now the 10 days is up. What am I, like 10 days past the 10 days? So it's, I don't know if they can show up, how long it takes, or if they have like a cutoff date.
I'm just here to change the locks.
You're just here to change the locks.
The only thing I do is watch him change the locks, I leave.
Like, that doesn't break your heart. Your head's not screwed on right. And I have chills. And so many of you going through this right now. These are the types of things that we need to press our leaders on.
Well, and I also, like, if I was a sheriff, there's no way I could do that. I would refuse to do that as my job. I'd be like, I'm not kicking these people. Your bank is doing just fine. Your bank isn't losing money. Your bank isn't broke. I'm not kicking these people out of their house.
Yeah, then you'd be out of a job, right?
Not if I was the sheriff.
They find some other poor... Right. Like, I'm not doing this. Yeah, you could. I guess it is, if you're the sheriff, anyone under you, but if it's a court order, it's coming from a judge.
Yeah.
You know, then you're in contempt of court, you know? So it's like, this is the system. And what's sad is a lot of these corporate landlords right now are pursuing evictions despite the moratorium. One company, you should make their name famous. It's called Progress Residential. They are basically continuing a pattern of high eviction rates. So Progress Residential, and David Dayan has done some great reporting on this, by the way, is a single-family rental company with over 40,000 homes in the United States. And they got these homes basically out of the financial crisis. These Wall Street landlords bought up all of these foreclosed properties and turned them into rental units. Now, there's all kinds of complaints about Progress Residential and other single-family rental companies. They're all the same, which is that they've jacked rents up, the units are substandard, and it's impossible to get repairs. The only way residents can pay their rents is because of social distancing efforts is through electronic. They have to pay it electronically. But guess what Progress Residential has done? They have hidden a $10 payment fee for online payments in their payment, and they didn't even know about it. You cannot come down here to drop a check off. We're making it electronic, by the way. And also, we're going to add a $10 electronic filing fee, which makes zero sense. That means there's not a human being there to collect a check, and it's all done digitally, and you're going to charge us more for it. Think about what banks do, right? Banks give you, if you sign up for certain banks, they'll give you, you can go to the teller like 3 or 4 times a month, right? And they want you to use their online banking portal so they can pay fewer tellers. So if you go to the bank more than 3 or 4 times, Wells Fargo or Bank of America, you will actually be charged a teller fee for using a human being, right? I think that was the case when we had Bank of America, if I'm not mistaken. If you went more than 3 times a month, they would charge you a teller fee. So now that they're moving to online banking or online payments for landlords for your evictions, we're going to charge you a $10 hidden fee? Screw you. Screw you. This nickel and diming is incredibly common, of course. Like when you look at your, you know, hidden 401k fees, all of this stuff. Because they hide it, they make it difficult for you to see it. And the bigger the corporate landlord, it's harder for like grassroots groups to get noticed. Arnold, one of these guys struggling says, look, there's no way to go up the food chain to talk to somebody. One of these tenants said. She said, like, private equity parents have boasted using the cost-saving technology to produce return on their investments. So now that we're using all of these online technologies, we're making more money for our hedge funds and all of the people that invest in our big $40,000 portfolio of rental properties. So this whole CDC order allows these corporate landlords, which are now consolidating themselves, like buying each other up. They're doing fine. And some of these homeowners are staying put for now. But basically, when this moratorium expires, there's going to be a huge inventory of these homes that are sitting out there. And these firms are sitting there waiting for it to buy them up. It's so sad. Once these large landlords reach a point of like total concentration within a community, they have the power to shape the rental trends and set policy. And there's just a handful of evictions. You know, like they send this sort of chilling message, basically. Folks basically have to find the money. And if they and if they know that they can be evicted, they have to find the money. They have to try to dig for it however they can. Like this woman selling her king-size bed, selling her fish tank, selling her furniture. So she now sleeps on her couch and her fish are in a bucket. She loses her job and goes and finds one at the dollar store and takes a huge pay cut. So these large landlords right now are in a better position than smaller landlords, the mom and pop landlords. So this order that Biden signed a week ago, while its intentions were somewhat good, it could have been improved in a whole number of ways, which is not make this sort of leaky eviction order so leaky, which makes it available for, you know, not just people who are behind on rent, not just for health related reasons, but for a whole host of reasons. But you have the big corporatists, you have the big corporate landlords who run the show. Biden could have improved both of these policies on the housing policy. This is why executive action needs to be more comprehensive, more deeply considered. Progressives need to push this further. We need to be able to speak up on this and get these kind of stories out there. But it's just heartbreaking to see this woman sitting there with her, you know, her fish tank in a bowl. Like, let me know in the chat right now, how many of you are dealing with this same issue? I mean, yeah, she, Matt, for all intents and purposes, exactly, Matt, they're model tenants, I see in the chat. Model tenants. She's trying to pay her rent. She's working. But she's behind because of no fault of her own. And these billionaires, once again, run roughshod over these people.
Well, and not to, you know, downplay it, but like some of the landlords are only small business owners too, and some of the landlords can't not get that money coming in either because they have their own mortgages to pay. I mean, that might not be the situation, but there are situations like that out there. These landlords are hurting too.
Well, that's the whole reason why I'm pushing for rental assistance. That's why there needs to be, as part of this new coronavirus stimulus package, which we'll get to in a moment, there needs to be rental assistance included in this, a huge chunk of rental assistance. Right now, there's about $25 billion in rental assistance available, but it's such a pain in the butt to go through and get access to. The amount of paperwork you have to fill out, and then it goes directly to the landlords. And really, the only landlords who are really able to take advantage of it are these big corporate landlords. So you see what I'm saying here? Like the little mom and pop landlord who, let's just say they're a 70-year-old couple in Helena, Montana. Now, this was an example. My first apartment I ever rented in Montana when I moved to I was a CBS reporter and I covered the governor in Helena, Montana. I rented an old Victorian apartment in an old house. I was like on the first floor, and I rented it from a couple that lived in Bozeman, Montana, like 3 hours away. I never saw them, and I just mailed a check for like $580 a month, which was more than I was making every month, by the way. So I went into credit card debt. It was awful. But it was just a mom and pop that owned this. You know, they were in their 70s. They owned this house. That's the typical landlord in the United States. And if that person had a mortgage on that house that I was renting, and now I can't pay, that house slips into foreclosure. People can't pay property taxes. Fire departments don't make money. Local school districts don't make money. It's a whole circle. So that's why the stimulus package needs to have affordable care, or affordable access to rental assistance. But the problem with the rental assistance program right now is that that little small mom and pop in Helena, Montana, doesn't know how to go through the hoops and hurdles of all this paperwork. But guess who does? The corporate landlords. They've got a team of lawyers. They know exactly how to apply for millions of dollars in assistance from the government. Hey, let's call the accounting department. Put our team of lawyers on it. The government just made a free program for us. Great. So these exact same billionaires who are running roughshod over you are the same ones that are be able to gain access to this type of program. Most people don't even know it exists. And if they do know it exists, it's incredibly difficult to facilitate. So President Biden needs to step up on this, and we need to hold them accountable. We need to be louder about this issue. And this is where you need to share this video with your family and friends. Have them call your local representatives. Tell them that you need rental assistance. Tell them that the system is broken, that an eviction moratorium is not enough. Rental assistance needs to be part of this new stimulus package, the $1.9 trillion stimulus package. We also got a new report out this morning on billionaires. So a new report shows that, well, billionaires are just doing fantastic, as the poor are suffering. This new report out from Oxfam shows just how big the wealth gap has grown during the pandemic. The rich managed to ride out this storm and see their wealth explode, while the poorest were pushed further into poverty. I'm sure that's no surprise at all to you. But the pandemic has unleashed an economic storm that hit the poor and vulnerable the hardest, with women and marginalized workers really being, you know, facing the worst of this in the job front. And the World Bank this morning is warning that 100 million people could be pushed into extreme poverty. Now, you know the numbers I've been telling you over the past few days. 8 million more Americans have been pushed into poverty. The World Bank is saying 100 million could be pushed into extreme poverty. It could take more than a decade to reduce the number of people living in poverty back to these pre-crisis levels, according to Oxfam. Meanwhile, the billionaires doing just fine. The wealth of the billionaires in the world rose $3.9 trillion between March and December of this year during the pandemic. It reached $11.95 trillion. I'm just going to round it up to $12 trillion, if you don't mind, unless any of you have a problem with that. The 10 richest men in the world, Bezos, Elon Musk, Bernard Arnault, Microsoft Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, they saw their net worth increase by $540 billion in the same period. Toby Durbin in our chat says, thank you for your super chat, says, if you are late now, your credit score gets hurt because they report it makes it even harder to find a new apartment or a house because you can't even rent without a good credit score now. Yes, that needs to be a part of this legislation. If you've been watching my show for any length of time, if you're a subscriber, you know that I've been calling for that as well. Because in America, our credit score is so important, which is ridiculous. Other parts of the world, it's not. In the United States, it is. Because the credit card companies have made it so. The corporate lobbyists have made it so. So your future is tied to your ability to pay back debt on a credit card. Now, if you have to pay rent on a credit card and you're behind on your credit card, guess what happens? Your credit gets screwed and then you can't get an apartment in the future. If you're not a subscriber to the channel, please subscribe. You can do so right down here. We talk about these issues every day, the progressive issues that you're not going to see talked about anywhere else. So if we took all of these billionaires and their money that they made from March until December, that would be enough to prevent anyone from falling into poverty as a result of the pandemic. And guess what? It would pay for a vaccine for everyone on Earth, according to Oxfam. This pandemic has exposed, you know, a pivotal disparity, an economic disparity for the world. I mean, this is transformative right now. Oxfam says, quote, I'm calling for higher tax. Oxfam said calling for higher taxes on wealthy and corporations alongside stronger protections for workers is what needs to happen. Stronger protections for workers and more taxes on the wealthy. Why is Amazon pay zero in taxes? How can this unbridled wealth continue to roll over? And how can we sit back and say that this is okay? Bernie Sanders doesn't. As you know, Bernie's been pushing for this. We'll hear from him in a second on this issue. But it is absolutely troubling. And then you have, you know, as the story I brought you last night, how the Hollywood elite and others are getting vaccines and when they're not even in line to get them. They're calling up private physicians. Yeah, Grover is pissed about that. They're somehow skirting the system and calling private physicians to come to their house and give them the COVID vaccine, even though they're not on the list. Oh, Hollywood. If you joined me on my show last night, I mentioned a story. I'll mention it again for you here, but I was so disturbed by this story. Out of Canada, out of Vancouver, a rich couple out of Vancouver, chartered a private jet. They're Canadian. They flew to a remote indigenous village where there was only 100 people living in this Canadian village, where they had enough vaccines to give out to 100 people. These two rich people show up from Vancouver and pretend that they own the hotel down the street. And everyone's looking at them like, we don't know who you are. You're not one of us. And they're like, oh yeah, we're here for the vaccine. We own the hotel down the street. Then people started snooping around and found out that no, they did not in fact do that. They lied and chartered a private jet to come in and get their vaccine from indigenous people. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. We're going to talk about the stimulus in a moment and tell you Bernie Sanders' take on all of this and where things head next. Where are these $2,000 stimulus checks? We'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about our next sponsor, our friends over at stamps.com. They are fantastic, and you're going to get free postage and a free digital scale. You know, why would you wait in line at the post office? You can literally print all of your postage from home and actually get cheaper rates than you would if you went through to UPS or the U.S. Postal Service. See that right on the front page? You get discounted rates. So if you've got packages or a home business you're thinking about launching, you can save money, print it on your free digital scale. You get a 4-week free trial and free postage just for trying it out. Now, if you look on your screen here, you notice there's a microphone at the top. So go to stamps.com, and at the top, click on the microphone. It says, how did you hear about us? And use the promo code INVEST, and then that way you can get started right now. You get a free digital scale mailed to your house, free postage, and a 4-week free trial to send anything from home. Do not wait in line at the post office, especially during a pandemic. It's so much easier to do to print out from home and do this. We do it all the time. There's no way I would go to the post office and stand in that line. Thanks to Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com and use that promo code INVEST to get that free scale and free postage. We thank them for their support. All right, let's talk about stimulus now. A lot of moving parts today on the stimulus front. The House Democratic leadership is in the process of drastically altering their schedule for the next 6 weeks in order to help speed up this COVID relief package. They had a bunch of things they were planning to do. That's all kind of up in the air now because House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer announced that these tentative changes to the schedule right now are going to happen. He announced this yesterday on their phone call with his caucus members. The House will not have any floor votes, though, the week of February 8th through the 15th. I think isn't that President's Day? They're off for a week, I believe.
Yeah, President's Week.
Yeah, so President's Week, right. But the committee will be working, apparently, during that time, even though they're off, working on this reconciliation package. Reminder, this would allow the Senate to pass a COVID relief bill with 51 votes and no Republicans. So Bernie Sanders is all in favor of that. Let's listen to Bernie on reconciliation. He's excited to use this strategy because screw the Republicans. We've been there before. Screw them, Bernie says.
Said that Democrats might need to use a process called reconciliation, which requires only 51 votes instead of the 60 to pass the coronavirus relief plan. You just heard Mitt Romney say that Republicans like him have shown that they are ready to compromise. So should Democrats move to pass coronavirus relief with 51 votes if they can't get Republicans' support, say, before the impeachment trial?
Well, I don't know what the word compromise means. I know that working families are living today in more economic desperation than since the Great Depression. And if Republicans are willing to work with us to address that crisis, welcome. Let's do it. But what we cannot do is wait weeks and weeks and months to go forward. We have got to act now. That is what the American people want. Now, as you know, reconciliation, which is a Senate rule, was used by the Republicans under Trump to pass massive tax breaks
for the rich and large corporations. It was used as an attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And what we are saying is, you use it for that, that's fine. We're going to use reconciliation, that is 50 votes in the Senate plus the vice president, to pass legislation desperately needed by working families in this country right now. You did it, we're going to do it, but we're going to do it to protect ordinary people, not just the rich and the powerful.
That seems like a good use of that. Who could be against that, right? I'm for that. I'm for helping people. So who's against it? I guess we'll find out over the next few weeks who's against that. Who's in favor of big corporations? What Democrats are on board with this?
Who could be against any of this during a pandemic? Like, they've been against this for like almost a year.
Because Mitch McConnell didn't want to bring any votes to the floor of the Senate. He just wanted to focus on judges. He doesn't give a rat's behind about the American people. These corporate elites in Congress, and Democrats and Republicans, I'm not letting any of them off the hook, just concerned with their corporate donors. They're just concerned with making sure that their big money donors have their, you know, get their pockets lined, get taken care of, legislation through that is meaningful for them. You know, defense contractors can get a defense bill through in 2 days, signed, done. Everyone's on agreement that we can just spend $780 billion overnight. Great. But when it comes to helping you, So to be clear, the House is going to come back February 23rd to begin taking up this reconciliation package. But Steny Hoyer canceled the 2-week recess that was supposed to begin on March 1st. So he said you're coming back. So you have a week off, you're coming back, and then you get another 2 weeks off. So good for him. Steny Hoyer canceled that. Good. So the House is not going to go home on March 1st. The House will then hold votes during the first 2 weeks of March to continue work on the COVID bill. So folks at home, if you're wondering when will we see this next package, could be March. Why not now? Why not right now? You know, if you listen to Chuck Schumer, it sounds like this is going to happen. We're going to do this right now. We're not waiting for anybody, but we're going to hear from the president in just a second.
What's your timeline on that?
Oh. Yeah.
As soon as we possibly can. Look, Donna, you know, I know these are crazy times. We got a new president in. We're dealing with the horrors of this pandemic, which also have got to be addressed immediately. We have not done a good job in producing the amount of vaccine that we need and certainly getting it into the arms of people.
Do you want it done before the impeachment trial starts?
We got to do everything. I mean, this is not, you don't have the time to sit around, you know, weeks on impeachment and not get vaccines into the arms of people. You don't have time to worry about vaccines and not deal with the fact that children in America are going hungry. We got to break through this old approach that the Senate takes years and years to do anything. We got a crisis right now. We can chew bubble gum and walk at the same time.
The American people need it. Good point. So where does Chuck Schumer come down on this? Of course, he's now the Senate Majority Leader. He's going to be driving this ship. But he's also got a president to deal with, a new president. So how is this going to shake out? If you listen to him, it sounds like he is pushing for this to happen immediately. Listen.
In addition to the confirmation of critical cabinet nominees, the Senate will soon move forward with legislation to address the twin crises facing our country, the public health crisis and the economic crisis. In December, Congress took the important step of passing interim emergency relief to the country, but we left the job unfinished. I understand that recent opposition from the political right to more spending has increased in volume now that there's a Democrat in the White House. But the pandemic doesn't particularly care that there's been a change in the administration. The needs of our country are still great, and the urgency to act is clearer than ever. So the Senate is going to press forward on another COVID relief bill. We want to work with our Republican colleagues to advance this legislation in a bipartisan way. But the work must move forward, preferably with our Republican colleagues, but without them if we must. We are still in the midst of a once-in-a-century crisis that has reshaped our economy and altered nearly every aspect of American life.
So he doesn't really want to work with Republicans. What he's saying is, we'll give them a chance. You know, we're going to give them a chance. But we're going to go through the reconciliation process, and we're going to move forward without them. Good. Which is what I've been saying. Screw them. I don't really care. You know, everyone wants to talk on CNN and MSNBC. And the question is, every one of those reporters keeps asking is, why don't you want to work with the Republicans? Why don't you, you guys should work on a bipartisan basis. And same thing on Fox. Oh, they're just going to look like they're trying to work by themselves. Why shouldn't they work with you? Are these like mainstream media networks smoking crack? I mean, do they really understand? It's because what their rich corporate overlords are telling them that that's the way that we need to run the show so that nothing meaningful actually gets passed in the United States.
They're filibustering the American people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like they're big owners, like what Comcast or all these people that own these different television stations. Right. That's what they're pushing for. They don't want any sort of meaningful progressive agenda to be pushed through. They want to be able to continue to make money. The big networks, you know, MSNBC, the Comcast of the world, all of that. So that's the kind of message you're going to see when you watch those shows. Like, why don't you work with your Republicans? You said you're going to work with Republicans. Who cares? I don't. Well, they've given their, you know, it's like, fool me once, right? Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And that's exactly what, like, how many times do you need to be fooled in this now? Back during Obamacare, the whole process, they said, we're going to work with you, we're going to work with you, and then they don't. But right now, they have got a pretty lofty goal to try to send President Joe Biden a relief package by the middle of March. Is that good enough for you? Let me know in the chat if you think that that's good enough for you right
Wait,
now.
Wait, I thought it was going out the door right away. 2,000 checks out the door right away. Right, March is not right away,
exactly.
Is it? I mean, I'm looking at my calendar here.
Joe, you said we were going to have stimulus checks literally like next week, you know? If you vote for John Ossoff and David Warnock and Raphael Warnock down here in Georgia, $2,000 stimulus checks are going to go out next week. Didn't you say that, Joe?
Come on, man.
Sorry. Got to hold you accountable. It's what you said. So now what are you saying?
Well, I propose that we, because it was bipartisan, I thought it would increase the prospects of passage. The additional $1,400 in direct cash payment to folks.
But wasn't it 2,000? When did that happen?
After they got elected, it changed. After they got their guys in office, that changed to addition to the, you know, making the total 600 and 1,400.
Right. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, my math was off.
It's okay.
Yeah, it was my bad. My math was off. I thought I heard him say $2,000 will go out next week. Okay, I'm sorry. I misheard it. My bad.
Well, there's legitimate reason for people to say, do you have the lines drawn the exact right way? Should it go to anybody making over X number of dollars or Y? I'm open to negotiate those things.
Ah, now you're open to negotiate. Means testing. So now we're going to start to do means testing on these stimulus checks.
You know what that means?
Because of what?
When they say I'm willing to negotiate, that just means we're going to delay this even longer. Because when they negotiate, it's like, hey, what do you think about? Yeah, we better ask the donors. They're just like him-hawing around, shaking hands, going, let's go get a soda and we'll talk about it. Like no urgency at all.
And negotiating isn't even really removing things. Negotiating is how much other crap can I stick in here? How much other pork can I stick in here so I get what I want, and then therefore you get what you want, which is, you know, $200,000 limit or $75,000. Now I'm seeing news headlines this morning that Democrats are open to the idea. Washington Post and others saying, you know, maybe if you don't make more than $75,000, maybe you shouldn't get a stimulus check. Infuriating. Infuriating. So there you have like this waffling back and forth. You run the country. They lost. Stop kowtowing to them, President Biden. They lost. The same criticism I had for President Trump. You are the president of the United States. Tell Mitch McConnell what the frick to do. But no. Well, there's a lot to do between now and then, because if you want to think about it, March is going to be here before we know it. Sadly, though, we thought we'd have a new $1.9 trillion stimulus package like ready next week, which is where Nancy Pelosi says it will be on her side to get over to the Senate. But the challenge right now is going to be the Senate, where the process is like molasses. It's slower. Party leaders have no room for error. And House Democrats now are trying to gear up for this, to try to meet this sudden deadline now. Budget Chairman Bernie Sanders, though, you know, he wants to work on this budget resolution next week, and which is the next process, isn't this reconciliation process. And then, of course, Trump's impeachment starts the following week on the 8th. And then the schedule, you know, of course, they're off for a week after that. So it, they might have to cancel that. I mean, I'm hoping maybe Chuck Schumer just says, you know what, we were going to have a week off. We cancel this. We don't need a whole week off for President's Week. Done. I would have demanded the same thing for Mitch McConnell. We should be demanding that of Chuck Schumer. Cancel that week. We do not have a week vacation right now. Americans are suffering. You do not get a week's vacation after you just had all of Christmas off, by the way. And you guys hardly work anyway. The $300 per week federal unemployment also runs out that day. It also runs out on March 14th for that deadline. So there's a lot to happen. Meanwhile, if we didn't need more of a bit of a drama today, House Democrats are debating internally whether to simply take up the Senate's budget to save time and get this rolled out. Democrats feel like they have no time to waste on this, and they've been here before. But unfortunately, there was some drama last night. If Democrats needed any more of a pain in the butt right now, they didn't need this, which is Senator Patrick Leahy was rushed to the hospital last night. He went home Tuesday night, so he was in the hospital, then he went home. Leahy spokesman said, the Capitol physician said that Senator Patrick Leahy had to go to George Washington University Hospital for observation out of an abundance of caution after getting test results back. They say he is now home. He's 80 years old. He's third in line to the presidency. And by the way, he's scheduled to preside over Donald Trump's impeachment trial, which starts in 2 weeks. I mean, just think about how tenuous Chuck Schumer's majority is right now. 50-50. And if he's not there because of an extended absence, that puts that 50-50 Democratic majority at total risk. I mean, literally, Chuck Schumer has like no room at all right now for any errors. So if Leahy is out, then that whole reconciliation process is gone. They won't have the votes, and then they'll have to go back to working with Republicans. That's amazing. It comes down to one senator right now. So if he's out for an extended period of time, you know, it might be one of those situations where if he feels like he can't execute his office, where he might actually resign. And then the governor of Vermont would have to install a new senator. That takes time. So like we needed this right now. We wish him a speedy recovery. I've interviewed him a number of times. He's a really nice guy. By the way, he's a senator. He's been in a number of Christopher Nolan Batman movies. As I mentioned, you might recognize him from some different scenes. He plays a rich white guy. I know that's probably a stretch, right?
Well, and people are saying in the chat, some people are mentioning that Joe Biden can only do what Congress would allow him to do. But the thing is, he could have passed this without Congress. Like, he didn't need Congress to get the stimulus out. But he said, I want to work with Republicans.
Well, there's certain chunks of it. Right. I mean, he could have said, look, you know, I'm not going to work with Republicans on this. Enough is enough. They lost. We're going to push through on budget reconciliation immediately. He could have started that process after John Ossoff won and Raphael Warnock won, and they could have started and had it ready to go and ramped up. The fact that we're now at the end of January and we don't have this in place. You know, and I know, like, we're all supposed to sort of sit back and give people passes on things, right? Because it's a new president. But this first 100 days, under normal circumstances, is incredibly important. Because after 100 days, people start campaigning for their next round of, like, running for 2022. So you get 100 days to get stuff done. During a pandemic, an economic crisis, 8 wars that we are in, this 100 days is more important than just about any 100 days in American history. A U.S. dollar that's collapsing. I mean, you want me to continue the list? So this could have happened much more quickly. This could have happened much more quickly.
And people are also saying that he said all along that, you know, it would be $1,400, the difference. But I actually have the audio, if you want to hear the audio, of him saying.
Yeah, do you have it handy?
Yeah. So here he is at the rally for, this is a live rally for Warnock and, what was the other guy? Warnock and?
John Ossoff.
Ossoff.
Electing John and the Reverend, you can make an immediate difference in your own lives. The lives of the people all across this country. Because their election will put an end to the block in Washington on that $2,000 stimulus check. That money that will go out the door immediately. Tell people who are in real trouble. Think about what it will mean to your lives. Putting food on the table. Paying rent. Paying part of your mortgage. Paying down the credit card. Paying the phone bill, the gas bill, the electric bill. Just look around. Millions of people in this country out of work through no fault of their own. No fault of their own. They're struggling. Many are fearful, and many have given up hope. Look at the lines at food banks. Hours and hours and hours. This is the United States of America, for God's sake. And there are food lines like we've not seen since the Depression. And they're getting longer. Families, children, people have worked their whole lives and never asked for a thing except a fighting chance. Now, they're lining up for food in America. And the debate over $2,000 isn't some abstract debate in Washington. It's about real lives, your lives, the lives of good, hardworking Americans. And if you're like millions of Americans all across this country, you need the money, you need the help, and you need it now. Look, Georgia, there's no one in America.
Here, Biden.
There you go.
$2,000 checks. And I love what he said too, which was, this is not, this $2,000 checks is not some abstract idea. Oh. But then after you're sworn in, or right, you know, right before you're sworn in, now we're starting to talk about how this is not, this is an abstract idea. Because what we meant was the $600 that was passed back in December by Trump, which had nothing to do with you, and $1,400 that we're now going to pass, it adds up to $2,000. That does make it an abstract idea. But I heard you say $2,000, and so did Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So did Bernie Sanders. By the way, the fact that we're even fighting over just $600 when other countries are providing $2,000 a month.
I mean,
in perpetuity, which is why I want all of you to sign that stimulus right now, right here in the bottom of your screen, is this petition. I have it in the show notes as well, in the description. Go to morninginvest.com/sign. We created a change.org petition. Change.org reached out to us. I got an email from them. So they're promoting it because we've got so many signatures. So they're pushing it out. So continue to sign it so we can push this out and get it to members of Congress. I'm really excited about how many signatures we've got on it so far. So continue to sign that petition.
Think about the Georgia runoff, okay? Think about that election for 1 second. It was both the Republicans and the Democrats were promising $2,000. That's what they were voting on. That's what people were voting on, that $2,000. And they were like, okay, do we believe the Republicans or do we believe the Democrats? And they chose to believe the Democrats because, you know, Republicans, and they still got screwed. Because that's what Purdue and that other person, they were running on, you know, $2,000 stimulus as well.
Well, someone said, well, the petition is a waste of time. Then don't sign it. But getting these signatures in the hands of members of Congress is powerful. You know what also is powerful is showing those members of Congress that you're not going to vote for them next time. And you're right. This was, Republicans played this tune. Kelly Loeffler ran on this as well. She said we need to get $2,000 stimulus checks. So did David Perdue. But the Democrats were more believable because you had President Biden down there saying it as well. And now we're splitting hairs over $600. We don't need Republicans. Steamroll them. Stop trying to play nice. I mean, like, listen to Joe Biden again. Say that he's like going to just sit back and kind of work with Republicans. He wants to have a bipartisan approach. He's fine to just, you know, just kind of hang out. And I'm fine to kind of vacillate on these ideas and means test. Like, should it only be for people making over $75,000? What happened?
Well, I propose that we, because it was bipartisan, I thought it would increase the prospects of passage, the additional $1,400 in direct cash payment to folks. Well, there's legitimate reason for people to say, do you have the lines drawn the exact right way? Should it go to anybody making over X number of dollars or Y? I'm open to negotiate those things.
Okay. Because you won an election. Democrats run the Senate. Democrats run the House. Why? Why do you care what Mitch McConnell thinks? And I'm telling you what, this is the kind of stuff that's going to cost Democrats seats once again. If they play this sort of middle-of-the-road corporate approach, they are going to lose the next round of elections in the midterms. And those who step up and who push for progressive ideas, push for stimulus, push for universal health care, push for paid family leave, push for a child tax credit, ending foreign wars, those are the people that are going to win. And they're, again, being marginalized in favor of these corporate middle-of-the-road hacks. So one person that could be primaried is Marco Rubio. And it's going to be interesting to watch the sort of populist Republican approach, because God forbid I say this, but could we see the Trump family begin to launch a campaign to run for both the Senate and the presidency again? The names have been floating around whether or not President Trump has already said that he planned to run in 2024. He did back off of this idea of starting a third party, but maybe he'd run again on the Republican ticket, which would be a death knell to people like Mitch McConnell. What about Ivanka Trump? There have been a number of rumors suggesting that Ivanka wants to start a political career and run against Marco Rubio in Florida in a primary in the Republican ticket. And Don Jr., as I mentioned, who's already lining up. He's written his book. He's already trying to take up the mantle. So will the Trump family be running for president?
Well, you did hear...
This question was asked... Sorry, go ahead.
You did hear that Trump opened up an office, right? The office of the past president or something like that, because he's going to push his agenda.
The office of the former president.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So these pieces... Yeah, the office of the former president. Good. Can't wait for the Trump library to open up also. So Marco Rubio was interviewed, and he was asked about this question, and watch how flustered, like, you know how Marco Rubio was made fun of by Trump, you know, called Little Marco and dripping water all over his face. But watch him sort of shake at the idea of Ivanka Trump running against him. Watch this.
You could be facing a primary challenge, right? There's talk that Ivanka Trump is interested in running against you. What do you think of that?
But who can't? I mean, all of us are elected. Every single one of us can be primaried. Every single one of us can have a primary challenge.
What would you think if it were Ivanka Trump? What would you think if it were she?
I like Ivanka Trump very much. We work together very well. I've never heard her say that. And bottom line is that whether she's a resident of Florida, any resident of Florida who's 30 years of age can run to be the Republican nominee, can run to be the U.S. senator as an independent or as a Democrat. When I run for re-election, like any other senator, you have to earn the right to continue to serve the people of your state. I'm very proud of what I've done over the last 6 years, and especially over the last four, working with President Trump during the campaign. We'll talk about that. We'll point that out to people when the time comes to do that. But none of us are entitled to run unopposed. People have a right to run against you. And I've always anticipated that a Senate race in Florida is going to be tough. I've done it twice, and they were both tough.
Would it be weird, though, that you've been very loyal and very supportive of President Trump if his daughter were to run against you? You're quite right. She has not indicated that. It does seem to be in the rumor mill, though. But you're ready regardless, I guess, right?
Well, I think you have to be ready regardless, no matter who you are, no matter where you are. I mean, there's every state, every 6 years, you elect a senator by going to voters. And you have to go to them and say, this is what I've done. If you send me back, this is what I'll do. And they make a judgment, both within your party and ultimately within the general electorate. But that's what I've always thought when you decide to run for re-election, especially in a state like Florida that's so competitive. Of course, these are all going to be tough races. I'm always known that. And, you know, the last time I ran for re-election, I filed, you know, 6 days before the deadline. That was pretty tough to put together, but we were successful. So, you know, when the time comes, we'll have a great campaign. We'll have a great story to tell. But I still have 2 years left in this term, and I have a lot of work to do. But I won't be able to do as much because I'll be sitting on the floor of the U.S. Senate in a stupid impeachment trial so that these guys can make their base happy.
You still feel that way, Senator? Stupid?
Yeah, more than ever. It's look, first of all, it's not even constitutional. It's logic tells you that, okay? The automatic consequence of impeachment and trial, if you're convicted, the automatic consequence of it is you're removed from office. That's the automatic consequence of this process. How can you put someone through a process where the automatic consequence of it is impossible? You can't remove Donald Trump from office. He's not in office. The second is, we've got all these important issues in this country. We've heard all these months and years about how the virus needs to be dealt with, and I agree.
Look at him, like, just kissing the butt of Trump, right? It's like, oh, you might be primaried by Ivanka. Yeah, you know, and this whole impeachment thing, what a joke. It's unconstitutional. What a joke. He must have been heeding the warnings from Republicans when President Trump sent a letter out to Republicans the other day, basically warning them. So who has the power? What do you think about Ivanka running again? Well, these next 2 years are going to be super interesting to watch, to see how this Republican Party lines up right now. Are they going to line up on the side of Trump? Are they going to line up and try to, you know, create or sustain a Republican Party separate from Trumpism? This is going to be the future. I'm excited to watch this unfold. Let me know your thoughts in the comments. Do you think any member of the Trump family is going to run for office? Do you think President Trump will run again? Do you think Don Jr. will run again? We'll replay this tape in a few years. Do you think Ivanka will run? Let me know. I already think Donald Jr. is going to run. I think that much looks clear. I don't know if Trump has the stamina for it, President Trump has the stamina for it anymore, if he'd want to do that or not. We will see, though.
What about Melania?
Nobody's, let me know in the chat.
Nobody's saying Melania might run.
I think she's done. Did you see her when she got off the airplane the other day? When she got off the airplane after, when they flew from Washington to Florida, like, we're done, she landed and they were like, Mr. President, can we take a picture? And she literally just walked away. She's like... No, I did all, I'm done. She changed her outfit into like a sunny dress. She's like, you can take all the pictures you want. I'm out of here. She just walked off. And President Trump was like, she's gone. She's done. I would be too. Like, I gave you 4 years, your little dog and pony show. I'm out. Oh, boy. Any good super chats we can take here before we wrap things up? By the way, I should mention, please subscribe to the channel if you're new here. Right down here in the bottom, you can subscribe on YouTube. Just click that little link right there. Do we have any new subscribers? Any people who are new? Go ahead and do it.
Tove, it's member can't chat. If you can't chat, make sure you're in the right account, because what happens sometimes is people are becoming a member, and then somehow you've got a second account and you're not able to chat. That's a YouTube thing. So all of you that are having issues with your membership, or want to cancel, want to re-up it, want to change it, go to your little icon up in the top right, which is your, let me show you here. YouTube.
And yeah, some people have two different Gmail accounts or something. So they've signed up and they've become a channel member and they're like, why can't I chat? You might be signed in with your wrong account.
Exactly.
That happens all the time.
So I'm going to go over to my account here really quick and show you how you manage that so that you know for the future. We get that question so often.
And I get emails about it. People wondering, like, I'm a member, but I can't chat. We have nothing to do with it because it's a YouTube thing. We don't control that at all. But very typically, it's just that you're signed in with your other Gmail account or another email. So, if
you come into here, let me switch to my account. So if you come to your little icon up here in the top right, then you've got your purchases and memberships right there. Click on that and you're going to see all of your super chats and then your membership. So you can see what channels you're a member of. And then if you click on manage, it drops down and you can deactivate and edit your credit card, all that other stuff. So, and if you want to increase it, you have to remove it and then start a new one. But you can see all of your memberships. It even has your Amazon Prime and everything, or Amazon Prime, your YouTube Premium, I mean, right here that you can manage. So all of that is under there in your icon, and then purchase and memberships.
Cool. Yeah, so thanks to all of our new channel members. We got 46 new channel members today. Thank you for supporting independent journalism. covering these stories. You're not going to see, I'm telling you, I dare you to today to flip on MSNBC or CNN and watch them attack President Biden for waffling on these $2,000 stimulus checks. If you find it, I would love for you to send it to me. You won't. They will not be critical of it. It won't happen. And if you tune into the conservative networks, you'll see them all complaining that Democrats are not going to, they're going to not be bipartisan and work with Republicans, having amnesia about the time that Republicans had the power and steamrolled over Democrats. So that these are the two mainstream media corporate narratives you'll see right now. But you will not see the middle of that, which is the truth. So we try to cover that here on the show.
So we got a super chat from Anthony Griffiths there.
Anthony, my landlord raised my rent to where my disability check could not cover rent. So I got priced out, not evicted, but I had to sell everything I owned. That's awful, Anthony. And this is the problem, you know, that rents are going up and we have an affordable housing crisis in this country. One of the things that President Biden plans to do, at least through some different executive actions and tackle some of the housing inequality issues in this country are on the table, even, you know, with first home buyer tax credits and other things like that. So we are hoping that there will be a broader push to keep rents controlled so that we don't have this out of control housing crisis in the United States. While these big corporations, like these big 40,000 home hedge funds, continue to wait to gobble up all of these properties and run rampant on people. See what other. Thank you, Shelley Durnell, for your super chat. Miss Katie Green says, I'm loving this that you started the $2,000 petition. There's already 10,223 signatures. That's awesome. Sign it, send it to your friends. Amy Williams says, I don't post my views on Facebook except sharing your videos, but after I get through today, I will probably be unfriended. Peeps, hit me up. What are you going to be unfriended about? Because you're gonna call attention to some of this BS.
Well, I think
Jasmine Michelle? Jasmine Michelle says, I told my dad about the show. If you're watching, hi dad. So Jasmine or Jasmine? It's Jazmin. So dad, if you're watching, thank you, Jasmine, for sharing the show. I appreciate it.
You know, after 4 years of what we just went through with the former president, like, I understand, like, it sucks. We all want to have hope. We all want to have hope in Biden doing the right thing. But it hurts people when, and I think people get a little bit upset when we point out that he's not doing what he says he's going to do. And it's because people need something right now. So I think that's the thing, is like, people don't want to already start bashing Biden, because that's the only hope they have right now. People voted for him because they have hope that he's going to be better. And so far,
right,
he's not really proving, you know, I mean, granted, it's only his first week or so, but, you know, and I think that's where you're going to have people that are afraid they're going to lose friends, because they're already starting to push back on Biden. But that's what we need to do. We have to hold him accountable. That's what the petition is for, to hold these people accountable so that they do what they say they're going to do. That's all they got to do. If they just did what they said they're going to do, we'd be off their backs. Nobody would have to protest. Nobody would have to do anything if they just did what they said. But they don't.
Yeah. Got a lot of chats here coming in. Let's see. Addie Morris says, Steve Cole, I have to donate plasma. Jeez, you have to donate plasma to pay your rent? Corinna Shiflett says, Biden lied. Jay Parker says, David, where can I get that Georgia Biden clip? It's available on YouTube. I was actually going to pull up the video version of it. Just look, I think if you just go to YouTube and look for Biden Georgia rally, you'll probably find it.
Yeah, I was looking and it looked, I mean, I'm wondering if it was pulled down, because I can't, like, that was the only one I could find was just audio, and it was an image.
Wow.
So I'm wondering if it's been pulled down, because I...
Yeah, maybe they try to get it taken down. Like, hey, we never said that. Linda SLC, thank you for your super chat. Says, I'm so sorry. I feel everyone is coming from wondering how they're going to be able to make it month to month. I know what it's like. I wish I could afford to help everyone here who is struggling. Me too. You know, one of the ways that we can make change here is to get progressive candidates in this country that work in Congress, you know, like Bernie Sanders or AOC or members of the squad or other people that understand what people are suffering with. Jake Goldenrod says, my dad would have loved this show, but being locked down for years was super harmful to his health, and he passed away 8 months ago. I'm so sorry to hear that, Jake. Sandy Wheeler says, I've put a lot of people on Facebook on timeout, and I have an opinion, and I can state it. If they state it, the arguing is unnecessary. Right. I think the thing is, look, we all want the success of our president, whether it was Trump or Biden, et cetera. But what I've warned you here on the channel for months, you know, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent, is that Biden had said back to right in front of Wall Street, nothing fundamentally will change when he was warning his Wall Street donors. When you elect me, nothing will fundamentally change. Those are his words in front of Wall Street. And so, of course, the fear is that that's true, right? That he will be this middle-of-the-road Democrat, corporate, very similar to Republican corporate members of Congress that just line the pockets of Wall Street and defense contractors and big business and don't give a rat's behind about the little person. That's all they do. And I have to say, I'm going to be honest with you, there's been a number of moves that the president has made through executive action and through some of his appointments and actually putting out there certain names for appointments of Office of OMB and some things like that, that have progressives very excited. The fact that Bernie Sanders is now chair of the budget Senate Budget Committee is a big deal. There have been other things that the president has done, which has been pretty eye-opening and shocking to progressives. Like, wow, you actually did that? Okay. So there have been quite a number of things that President Biden has done that I am excited about on the progressive side. But there are these moments, the $1,400 stimulus checks, this eviction moratorium needs more teeth. There's plenty of things that he needs to do to step up to that next level. And I think as progressives, we need to hold him accountable. We need to make sure that our candidates hear that voice and push for that. And that's what this show is all about. Yousef Booz says, Clayton, you need to get people to tweet out your videos so we can get your views. Mainstream, not most people already mad at Biden, didn't vote for him. I like what he did. Brandon Boyd, thank you for your super chat. Says, politicians lie. That's why Trump was elected in the first place. It was a mistake to elect Biden. Let's see. Thank you for your super chat, Solange. Carrie Ratza, Talking Tax, says, Biden needs to do what he says. By the way, it's John Shanks. This is my new streaming name. Hope your dad is doing well. Thank you. Thank you, John. Yeah, if people want to tweet out my videos, that would be great, or share them on Facebook. You know, any way they can get the story out there would be fantastic, you know? Get the message out. That's what we need to do. Drive people to understanding that when you're in the middle of the road, you're not accomplishing anything. You're standing in the middle, nothing happens. That's the status quo, the middle. That's where all the big business sits, right? It's the other sides of the pyramid. It's down here. We have to climb up that side of the pyramid to get to the top. And that's what this show is all about. So thank you for subscribing to the channel, everyone. I really appreciate it. Thanks for hitting that little bell notification so you're notified when we go live every morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And we're doing our afternoon show at 4 p.m. Eastern time as well. So tune in for all of the nightside news out of Washington on the budget, on stimulus, on these progressive ideas that we need to keep pushing forward. Much love to all of you. Grover says, thanks for a great show, everyone. He's going to lie back down and go to sleep. Peace.
Hey, everybody. Go ahead and click that like button.